Hey y'all, I'm Dan, and I host a podcast called Kinfolk, Stories of Community and Connection. I talk with folks from all over Appalachia, artists, small business owners, local legends, you name it. We share real stories about what brings us together, what keeps us going, and all the magic tucked away in these hills. If you're into small town charm, big hearts, and good conversation, come hang out with me on Kinfolk. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Mountain State Mysteries contains mature themes and discussions that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. All individuals mentioned in this episode are considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
Hey, y'all. I'm your host, Mark Covey.
And I'm Courtney.
And this is Mountain State Mysteries. The case we have for you today is one that is currently in the headlines. The murder is one that you have to hear about to believe. One that may have not taken place in West Virginia, but has ties to the Mountain State. This is the case of Krista Pike. Krista Gail Pike was born on March 10, 1976 in Beckley, West Virginia, where she and her older half-sister were raised. Her parents, Krista Henson and Emil Glenn Pike, had a tumultuous relationship, being married for 2 years, divorced for a year after Krista was found cheating, and they remarried for another 2 years after attempted suicide. Both of them were negligent, and aunt said as an infant, Krista would be crawling around through piles of dog poop all over the house.
That is absolutely awful.
I could not imagine living like that. But Krista didn't care. She continued her life of carousing even after being told that her child was experiencing seizures. Krista's grandmother would always help take care of her. She actually believed that her parental grandmother was the only one who ever loved her.
Her mother testified that she attempted an overdose of acetaminophen when she was in the third grade. After this, she received psychiatric treatment, followed by psychological care and therapy at different times. At the age of 12, she attempted suicide after the death of her and grandmother in 1988, which she received little support.
Her living situation continued to be unstable throughout her teenage years, as she was both the recipient and perpetrator of violence. One of the times, a boyfriend of her mother's punched her in the face and she chased him with a butter knife. Charges were filed then settled. While staying with her father's new family, one of her younger half-sisters claimed to have been molested by Krista, causing her father to kick her out of his home. She claimed to have been sexually assaulted or molested at several points in time. Her friends and family doubted these accusations, noting that she is a pathological liar. Her mother claimed that in one incident, a man claimed by telephone that he was going to rape her mother. In response, Krista and a friend beat him with a stick in a parking lot. Although she had been an intelligent child, her unstable home life caused her to frequently change schools, which significantly affected her performance in school. In 10th grade, she was sent to a juvenile facility for a year, where she became interested in Job Corps, a government program aided in helping low-income youth by offering vocational training and career skills. She completed her GED program and aspired to train as a nursing assistant. In late 1994, she attended the Job Corps Center in Knoxville, Tennessee. She began dating a boy named Tadaryl Shipp. Together, the couple develop an interest in occult and devil worship.
Well, I know one thing. That's what normal couples do.
Right. I mean, like, maybe watching documentary and stuff like that, which I know you love a good cult doc. and like love getting into cults, but like devil worship, that's like in total left field there.
Baby, that is left field. They sacrifice people. I mean, they don't care. They will straight up strap somebody down and kill them.
While at Job Corps, Krista became jealous of her classmate, 19-year-old Colleen Slinner, who she believed was trying to steal her boyfriend to Daryl from her.
Just to think that she thought that he was going after her and she was going after him. I mean, that does put a misconception in your head at times. I feel like everybody thinks that one time.
Exactly. I mean, Colleen's friend even denied these accusations. Along with Krista's friend, 18-year-old Shadala Peterson and Krista planned to lure Colleen to an isolated abandoned steam plant near the University of Tennessee's campus. On January 12, 1995, Krista, Tadaryl, Shadala, and Colleen signed out of the dorms and walked to the woods where Colleen was told they wanted to make a peace offering by offering her some marijuana.
I tell you, that is so nice of them.
I mean, I guess that was a normal peace offering in 95.
I can tell you right now, I never offered anybody some marijuana in 1995. I mean, granted, I was 13, but, you know.
I mean, you know, me neither.
I mean, the typical, like, you were just a small infant. I mean, typical of the peace offering was, hey, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry, girl.
When they arrived at the secluded location, Colleen was attacked by Krista and Tadaryl, while Shadala played as lookout. For the next 30 minutes, Colleen was taunted, beaten, and slashed. A pentagram was carved in her chest. Finally, Krista smashed her skull with a chunk of asphalt, killing her.
I mean, dang. That's a brutal way. Did they actually say, like, what kind of instruments were used to kill her?
Yeah, they had a box cutter and a meat cleaver. And Court, do you want to guess what Krista kept as a token of the murder?
I was going to say maybe some asphalt.
Try a piece of Colleen's skull.
Good God. What'd she do? Wear it around her neck as a token or something?
She just like kept it in her jacket pocket.
So you want to hear something?
Yeah.
Krista actually started showing off the piece of the skull around school, which she actually did more than that. She bragged about killing Colleen to her friend. The three were arrested within 36 hours. The logbook showed the four left together and only three returned. Detectives found the piece of Colleen's skull in Krista's jacket pocket.
Not too long after her arrest, she confessed to police about the torture and killing of Colleen, but insisted they were only just trying to scare her and it got out of control.
I mean, how can you say that you're going to scare somebody and you literally took a box cutter and a meat cleaver to this poor girl? Like,
exactly. Like, it's not like out of hand. It's just overkilling at this point. It's literally just overkill.
Literally. God bless. In 2015, Colleen's mother had repetitively asked Tennessee authorities that the skull be returned to her for proper burial, though it remained in possession of the state as evidence. They stated that it would not be returned while the case remained open. Now, when did this happen? 1995. Oh, wait a minute. Is my math mathing?
You know I don't do math in my head.
Oh, I'm at 95. You just turned 30.
Mm-hmm.
So I gotta take 20 years. I was right. 20 years. And how is this case still open? How, after 20 years, is it still open? Oh. Krista Tadaryl and Shadala were all charged with first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. Tadaryl, who had turned 17 barely 2 months before the murder, was tried as an adult. Shadala, who agreed to become a witness for the prosecution, received probation after pleading guilty to being an accessory after the fact. The prosecution sought a death sentence for Pike and life without parole for Todaro. During Krista's trial, the prosecution was aided by evidence in her confession. She was charged with first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit murder. On March 22, 1996, after only a few hours of deliberation, Pike was found guilty on both counts.
Hi, I'm Shane.
I'm Hannah.
And we're Country Roads Creeps. We're a podcast that covers all manner of creepy, spooky stories, from cryptids and conspiracies to unexplained deaths and disappearances to mysterious and paranormal happenings in the world.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts. Check out our Facebook page and our Instagram account at Country Roads Creeps for photo dumps and more information we'll post with every episode.
If you enjoy the show, please feel free to share us with your friends and leave us a 5-star review. And if there's any topics that you'd like to hear us cover in the future, feel free to message us on our social media accounts. Is that it?
That's it.
All right. Well, be safe driving home and watch out for the not deer.
Bye.
Bye.
On March 30th, she was sentenced to death by electrocution for the murder charge and 25 years in prison for the conspiracy charge. In January of 1997, Todaro was also found guilty on both counts. However, after the jury could not unanimously agree whether he deserved to spend the rest of his natural life in prison, the judge imposed a consecutive 25-year sentence for his conspiracy conviction, ensuring that he would not be eligible for parole eligibility. They described him as a dangerous individual. The judge imposed a consecutive 25-year sentence for his conspiracy conviction, ensuring that he would not become eligible for his parole until he was in his late 40s to early 50s. He will become eligible for parole in January of 2026.
Our justice system is so screwed up.
Yeah.
I mean,
like, you kill someone and you carve a pentagram into their chest, but let's see if you can get free in 2026.
You know, that's only a few months away. And honestly, if it's a consecutive sentence and things of that nature, I mean, I just don't feel like it should even come up for parole or anything of that nature. I mean, truthfully, he still has 5 years left on a sentence, but you're going to bring him up for parole. Like, I'm sorry. I just don't think that that happens. Now, it would be a completely different story if he was an innocent person within this. But, I mean, our judicial system needs to do better. I will highly say that 100%.
100%.
They also need to do better investigating, too, if we're going to go at it while we're talking about this.
Following the guilty verdict, Krista launched, canceled, then relaunched an appeal of her conviction in the Tennessee State Courts. In June of 2001... and again in June of 2002, against the advice of her lawyers. She asked the courts to drop her appeal and sought to be executed by electrocution. Criminal court judge Mary Beth Leibowitz granted the request and an execution date of August 19th, 2002 was set. Krista soon thereafter changed her mind on July 8, 2002. DeVinch lawyers filed a motion to allow the appeal process to continue. The motion was denied. However, on August 2, 2002, a 3-judge state appeals court panel ruled that the proceedings should be continued and the execution was not carried out. In December of 2008, her latest request for a new trial was turned down and she returned to death row. With this denial, her allowed appeals under the rules and procedures of the state of Tennessee criminal justice system were exhausted.
In May of 2014, her lawyers entered an appeal in the federal court system. Her lawyer saw a commutation of a sentence from death to prison on the following grounds: ineffective assistance of counsel, she suffered from mental illness, and capital punishments as administered in Tennessee is unconstitutional. In a 61-page ruling by the U.S. District Judge Harry Sandin Matus Jr. issued on March 11, 2016, all grounds were rejected and the request was denied.
In August of 2019, having heard the same appeal by her lawyers, on October 1, 2018, the 3-judge panel on the United States Court of Appeals, the Sixth Circuit panel, unanimously upheld the lower court ruling and denied relief. On August 24, 2001, Krista, with alleged assistance from inmate Natasha Cornett, which, if you don't know her name, she is serving a life sentence without parole at the Bledsoe County Correctional Complex in Pikeville, Tennessee, for her involvement in the Lily Lid murders. Anyway, back to the story. Krista attacked and attempted to strangle another inmate, Patricia Jones, with a shoestring and nearly succeeded in choking her to death.
Random. Why was Patricia in prison?
She had been serving a life sentence for the 1994 murder of 84-year-old Alberta Coker in Knoxville at the time of her attack. After this, Krista was convicted of attempted first-degree murder on August 12, 2004. Although the Tennessee Department of Corrections maintained that Cornett assisted in the crime.
But did she really?
Honestly, I'm not sure. Their investigators concluded that there was insufficient evidence to the charge with her helping Krista's attack on Jones. In 2003, she was convicted on attempted first-degree murder and received a 25-year life sentence for the attack on Jones. In March of 2012, it was found out that Krista made escape plans involving corrections officer Justin Heflin as well as Donald Coat of New Jersey, though it's never been determined how it exactly began. Donald, who worked as a personal trainer in his early 30s, entered into a letter-writing correspondence with Krista around the beginning of 2011.
I've always been completely fascinated with this, of people writing inmates and falling in love with those inmates.
Oh, now you can FaceTime them.
Like, mind blown. Like, mind blown. Like, it's one of those things that you wish, like, you know, the magic school bus, that you could go into somebody's mind and just see exactly what was going through into their mind of why they would want to do this. Yeah. And jeopardize everything that they have to help that person escape. Like, it's something I would never fully comprehend. And I'm completely fascinated by it. Like, how both Menendez brothers married.
Look at Ted Bundy. I mean, I'm pretty sure he married in prison, had a kid and all that.
Yeah, I mean, it just completely, I mean, I will never fully grasp it, but I will always be 100% fascinated about.
So by July of that year, he was making the nearly 1,682-mile round trip from Flemington, New Jersey to Nashville, Tennessee to visit Pike in prison, which, this may shock you, but I did Google map it. So I did learn that you can leave Flemington and drive for 12 hours and 15 minutes and go through one of the panhandles of West Virginia and spend most of the trip in Virginia. Or you can drive for 12 hours and 22 minutes and spend a good part of your trip in West Virginia and Kentucky. Anyway, that's not important.
Quick question.
Okay.
Do we know how many times he made this trip?
I do. And your jaw's going to hit the floor when you find out that he was visiting on her visitation days once or twice a month.
Did he work?
He was a personal trainer.
Well, I mean, he could just take off at any time, but I mean, like, God bless.
Yeah.
Really, when you think about it, that's almost 4,000 miles a month.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly more. I don't know. But I mean, oh my God. Like, that is just absolutely mind-blowing.
Eventually, he communicated a plan for her escape, and she enlisted the help of Corrections Officer Heflin, who agreed to participate in return of cash and gifts.
So, do we know what their plan was?
Sadly, no, but I mean, for good reason.
Ugh, do you know what the good reason is?
Security concerns. The Tennessee Department of Corrections has not provided many details about the plan. However, the eventually unsealed indictment laid out a scenario where a prison key would be traced and a duplicate would be created. Early in 2012, prison personnel received information about the escape plot. This led to the attempted prison break being prevented by a joint investigation involving the Tennessee Department of Corrections, the Tennessee Bureau of Investigations, and the New Jersey State Police. According to the TBI, the plan was not very far along when uncovered. The, quote, jailbreak was not imminent, end quote. In March of 2012, Donald was arrested and charged with bribery and conspiracy to commit escape. While Justin was arrested and charged with bribery, official misconduct, and conspiracy to commit escape. However, Crystal was not charged, and it was unclear to the investigators if she was a participant in the conspiracy other than being aware of it. On May 31st, 2012, Donald was sentenced to 7 years in prison to be served at the Tennessee State Northeast Correctional Complex. Justin, who cooperated with authorities after his arrest, served no prison time.
You've got to be kidding me. No prison time.
No, but he was terminated from his job with the Tennessee Department of Corrections.
Oh, yes. We know that was something big, you know. I mean,
yeah.
This is reason why people are so frustrated with our judicial system.
Literally, like, you were involved in a conspiracy to help someone escape.
Yes.
But you're good. You're just fired.
Baby, don't worry. You're still going to get that pension. Don't worry. You work for it. You got it. I mean, that's what it seems like.
Literally.
The wait is over. The Mountain State Mysteries merch line is live. Rep your favorite true crime podcast with exclusive hats, tees, keychains, and more. Every piece is inspired to get you lost in the mystery. Shop now by visiting the link in our show notes.
Hey y'all, I'm Elisa.
And I'm Samantha.
And welcome to Watch for Deer Podcast. We're a couple of best friends from Southern West Virginia, and around here, Watch for Deer is our way of saying we love you and be safe.
This is a conversational podcast that covers many topics from A to Z, including, but not limited to, true crime and the paranormal. Our goal is to bring you an episode a week, so come listen as we tell stories that will make you laugh and maybe even blow your mind. Y'all be safe,
and watch for deer.
On August 27th, 2020, Herbert Slatery's office requested the Tennessee Supreme Court to set an execution date for Pike. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic in Tennessee and various other factors, her attorneys were granted extensions by the court, basically allowing them more time to argue as to why Krista should not be executed. The state did not oppose the extensions. On June 7th, 2021, her attorneys filed another motion to oppose the execution date and request a certificate of commutation. The motion was denied.
Before November of 2022, she had completely exhausted all appeal processes. However, in November of 2022, the state Supreme Court found that the state laws of juveniles automatically sentenced to life in prison without paroles was unconstitutional. On August 20th, 2023, lawyers for Krista used this ruling in an attempt to reopen her bid to have her 1996 conviction and sentence thrown out. Her lawyers argued her young age and damaged mental health at the time of the killing should spare her from facing execution. In October 2023, Knox County Criminal Court Judge Scott Green denied Pike's request, saying that the November 2022 Supreme Court ruling did not apply to her. Judge Green said, quote, "The Brooker case addressed only juvenile offenders in Tennessee. The High Court, in the opinion written by now-retired Justice Sharon Lee, specifically addressed the question of juveniles, not adults. The ruling applies only to juvenile homicide offenders, not to adult offenders," end quote. To the state, Krista was legally an adult.
On September 30th, 2025, the Tennessee Supreme Court issued a death warrant for Krista, scheduling her execution to take place exactly 1 year later, on September 30th, 2026. If Krista is executed, she will be the first woman to be executed in Tennessee in roughly 200 years. We'll be back next week with a new case. If you find yourself enjoying Mountain State Mysteries, take a second to follow, download, and rate the show on your favorite podcast platform. It helps others find good West Virginia true crime podcasts.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube, all at Mountain State Mysteries.
Do you have a case you want us to cover? Send us an email at mountainstatemysteries304@gmail.com.
For the show notes, check out our website, mountainstatemysteriespodcast.com.